is the People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Final hour of the People's Show. What's going on? Thanks for making us part of your day. If you're listening live or listening on the podcast, we salute you no matter what. Drop a 5-star review if you are listening on the pod, Apple, Spotify, wherever you grab your podcast from. Always appreciate it. I think we're sorting out who our winner is for that trivia question. Should we drop the answer now, or should we wait till we have a winner here?
We can drop the answer. We can update the winner a little bit later on.
We asked you, the Canucks returned to Rogers Arena after 38 days on Friday. Who is the Canucks' first ever regular season opponent at Rogers Arena / GM Place?
And the correct answer is the Detroit Red Wings, October 9th, 1995. Remember, the key here is first regular season opponent. Technically, the first ever opponent was the Anaheim Ducks, but that was a preseason game. And I'm looking at this this box score for this game. Steve Yzerman scored the first ever goal at the arena. You had the first Canucks goal was from Mike Ridley. And in that game, Darren McCarty fought Scott Walker at the first ever game of GM Place / Rogers Arena.
It all comes full circle.
And now he's back.
You know, with some heavyweights on the lineup now. Kyle Burrows dropping mitts, man.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot. Getting that Scott Walker influence.
Even Tyler Myers right there against Michael McCarron, who's a big boy.
Yeah.
But shouts to Tyler Myers for landing that hit on Granlund early in the game. Felt like maybe McCarron was getting retribution for that, but physical play from Tyler Myers.
It didn't feel like there was any other reason for that fight to happen outside of that hit on Granlund, because it was so out of context. McCarron just like accosting him up the ice. It's like, dude, the play's elsewhere. We haven't even seen each other on this shift. Go play the game, but if you want to fight, let's fight. Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda here on the People Show, minutes away from Don't At Me. So get your submissions in for that as well. You'll have chances to win tickets to the Zach Brown Band. But let's talk to our guy, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's it going?
It's going good. How's it going with you guys?
Oh, you sound so cheery. You sound like the man that watched a 3-1 victory earlier today.
Oh, guys.
I didn't actually watch it, no.
I had
stuff to do. I was running around, but I'm glad to hear that that was the result. You're breaking the news to me right now.
Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to spoil it for you if you were going to watch it later.
Oh, that's all good. I wasn't. Don't worry.
This is too lovable between two Manchester United fans. I'm sickened by
right
this.
Now we've got to take the W's where we can get them because they've been, you know, it feels like they've been few and far between anyway. So let us have this moment, please.
Fine.
We've had so little, Randy. We've had so little.
Fine, fine. I can't do it. You know me.
Vancouver Canucks have been progressing better than Manchester United have recently, Batch. That 5-game road trip ends. You know, what was the biggest positive coming out of that road trip for you?
Elias Pettersson, without a doubt. The fact that he seems to have found his ability again. You know, I'm thinking back to Space Jam, and I know lots of people have used that sort of analogy that he's got his talent out of the basketball again, and he's back to being himself. And, you know, they needed him to be at the end of that trip with, you know, Garland and Horvat going down, and, you know, they were going to need to get their offense from somewhere. And it was nice to see Pettersson have a couple of good games, and not just that he, you know, scored goals, because we've seen earlier in the year he would put up points and chip in on the scoreboard, but he still didn't look like himself. I thought the last two games were the most Elias Pettersson-like Elias Pettersson has looked this season, and that's encouraging to see for a group that, you know, much like they did at the end of the road trip, they're going to need him to continue to produce offenses. You know, it looks like they'll be without Horvat and Garland for at least a few more games, and with the way the COVID situation is developing, who knows who else is going to be out of the lineup before too long.
Yeah, your mention of, you know, missing Bo Horvat is obviously a big one with Elias Pettersson stepping into the middle there. But I also found that, you know, having him play next to a Hoglander and a Pod Colson, two guys that were kind of searching for their confidence as well, especially Hoglander, that was a moment where he could not only elevate his game, but elevate the game around those, you know, with those other players as well. And it showed yesterday where, you know, Hoglander makes that strong play at the blue line, sets up Podkolzin, and then just throughout the game, they just felt like a confident bunch as a unit.
Yeah, I thought they did too. You know, easily the Canucks' best line in the game. And, you know, whether that will be consistent, I'm still skeptical of, because, you know, all three of them are young players who have had their ups and downs this season. So for it to go like that for them every single night maybe isn't a realistic expectation, but it kind of gives you a taste of what could be when some of these guys develop a little more and grow into the NHL players that they will become in a few years' time. It kind of reminds me of, you know, I believe it was the first year Hughes was called up, and they had him at the end of the year, and it was him and Pettersson, and I believe it was Besser, and the three of them were out on an overtime shift, and they
versus
just
LA, you know, yeah.
Yeah, they had the puck on a string, and everybody was like, wow, you know, that's amazing, and it sort of gives you a glimpse of what the future could be like. You know, I got a little bit of that feeling from the way that line played last night in Nashville.
On Pettersson, you know, what was really fascinating, because you mentioned it wasn't just the goals. It's, you know, when he can play like that, and when he's at peak performance, the game just constantly has to go through him. And what was very encouraging, obviously, next to Hoglander, is they were in the offensive zone the whole night. And, we were focused on Hoglander's defensive game. But, you know, when they play like that, it's constantly on the front foot. Everything's just got to go through Elias Pettersson. You just kind of saw him at his peak. Does it change, you know, what you think can happen for the rest of the season if PDE is back?
Yeah, absolutely it does. You know, this is a team that has already gone on a great surge since Bruce Boudreau arrived in the last, you know, 5 weeks, I guess it is. And, you know, other than the little blip of the three-game skid against three of the top teams in the NHL, they've been a pretty consistent winning team. So if you take that and then you add a rejuvenated Elias Pettersson producing points at, you know, an improved pace anyway, whether it's, you know, back to the PD of old or whether it's, you know, not quite to that same degree, his ability to chip in with offense is so crucial to this team and anything they want to accomplish this year, because with the way that they were playing with him down the middle and Miller down the middle and Horvat down the middle, if you can get back to that when you get everybody back in the lineup healthy and Pettersson can continue to play like this and help drive a line, then you know, that's more of the top nine forward group that we were expecting going into the season. And the conversations we were having about, you know, oh, the Canucks' issues aren't going to be scoring goals, it's going to be defensive, when in fact, you know, it's been the exact opposite in recent weeks and throughout most of the season. So an offensive uptick from Pettersson, and really, let's be honest, a regression to the mean in terms of things like shooting percentage and you know, just a player getting chances. I can't even count the number of posts that Pettersson has hit to this point in the season. So, you know, if he has his confidence back, if he's playing better, both with and without the puck, and burying goals as well, then it only proves to be a positive for this team as they continue to try and surge up the standings. And the other thing that Pettersson does when he's playing well and engaged, and I heard Thomas Drantz mention this on the Canucks Hour the other day, and it's a stat that I always track with Pettersson as well, is how many penalties he draws. Because he's consistently been one of the team leaders and at times one of the league leaders in drawing penalties. And so that's a huge added bonus to your team as well, because maybe he's not scoring the goal, but he's drawing the penalty that allows your team to go to the power play. And, you know, certainly if your power play can capitalize more nights than not, which hasn't necessarily been the case for the Canucks this year, but, you know, you give yourself more lottery tickets to try and score more power play goals, which is going to allow you to win more games in the long run if you're able to do that. So, you know, it's a team that's already been on the rise without Pettersson, and if he can start pulling on the rope as well, then, you know, it'll certainly make the second half of this season very interesting.
Well, you talked about the power play there, and absolutely right. It feels like it's a big win for this team if they can get that going consistently. And we look at their 5-on-5 play on this road trip, and, you know, zone possession time 5-on-5 and goals for and high danger chances. I know score effects plays a role at some point when you're chasing a game, but for the most part, they did very well, even against tough competition outside of that Carolina game. Where they, you know, fell apart was that penalty kill, Batch. So when we talk about other special teams, you know, 50% on this road trip as a whole, we're kind of back at square one. I know we gave a lot of, you know, props to Scott Walker and Bruce Boudreau to add something to it, but it feels like they're yet again searching for confidence when it comes to this PK, and we're back at square one a little bit.
Yeah, and they're going to have to shore that up. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be a complete turnaround, because it's been a historically bad penalty kill this year. It's on pace to be the worst penalty kill in recorded history of the penalty kill. You know, but that said, if they can take that and make it just, you know, rather than being a horrendously bad penalty kill, just make it sort of a normally bad penalty kill, that would be a drastic improvement and would really help them in terms of trying to win games. Because, you know, not just on this road trip, but throughout most of the first portion of the season, this is a team that has thrown points away by bleeding power play goals against. And it's not something that will be sustainable. You know, they've gone on a great run. They've won a ton of games under Boudreau. They put themselves back in the playoff mix, but just being back in the mix isn't going to be good enough if you want to really push up the standings. You have to continue to have the kind of success that you've had, or, you know, you need to be a middling team that finds a way to win another 8 or 10 games in a row or something like that, like they did when Boudreau first arrived. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you're not giving up power play goals all the time. So I don't know what the solution is, really. It, you know, to be honest, it could be a personnel issue more than anything else, where they just don't have the horses to be able to successfully kill penalties. And then you throw into the mix the added possibility that someone like Tyler Mott has moved before the deadline. That's going to be another blow to your penalty kill. He's pretty well your top PK guy. So, you know, Boudreau and Walker and Brad Shaw really have their work cut out for them to just try and make that penalty kill, you know, keep its head above water a little bit more than it has. And if they can do that, and then their power play can score somewhat consistently, and they can find a way to at least be even in the special teams battle, if not positive in terms of power play goals scored versus against, then they get themselves a chance to win based on, as you allude to, the way they've been playing 5-on-5. But if the penalty kill doesn't improve, then you can play as well as you want 5-on-5. If you take penalties, though, then the puck's going to end up in the back of your net, and it's going to continue to cost you points and likely be a reason why at the end of the year we could look back and say that they didn't end up pushing up the standings to make the playoffs, because their penalty kill right now is on track to be dead last in the league.
It's the People Show on Sportsnet 650, talking to Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on 650. So the schedule comes out. We see what they're going to be facing here the back end of the season. Six games added in February, one added in April. You know, and these games, Batch, in particular, I was looking last night, you know, they've played 7 more games on the road than they have at home. How much of a boost, or how much should we read into that schedule that they're going to be able to play these games now at home and start to make up the difference of this disparity than their road-home splits and maybe start catching up to the rest of the teams in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I look at the stretch in the former Olympic break now as a crucial point in the season, because you're right, they've played a ton of home games. They've just come off 9 straight games away from home, albeit with, you know, a couple of extended breaks mixed in there. But if you want to make up ground in the standings and you want to take advantage of home ice advantage, then you have to do just that. So that's a stretch in the schedule now where you've got all those home games that have been added in. You've got to win them. You've got to take advantage of the fact that you're at home. Or if they come out of that stretch at 500 or middling, or, you know, not really taking advantage of that opportunity, then, you know, we're talking about them being in a similar situation as they are now a month from now. And all that means is that you've lost a month of time to regain ground in the standings. So when you get those homestands, when you get the benefit of being able to play at home and sleep in your own bed and have the last change and everything that goes with, you know, being at home, playing in front of your own home fans, of course, and hopefully at some point it'll be 100% capacity of fans at Rogers Arena to really try and help give that home ice advantage that we saw being so crucial with the Bruce There It Is chance in, you know, back in the first half of December. But if you don't take advantage of that stretch, then you're really sort of throwing away an opportunity that you're being given here based on the fact that you have played more road games than every other team. So, you know, as you sit right now, it's nice to know that you're going to play more at home. It's nice to know that you're going to have that opportunity. But if you don't do anything with that opportunity, then it doesn't matter.
Well, Bach, you know, one of the positives coming from that trip, you mentioned Pettersson, the 5-on-5 game, that fourth line, and specifically Tyler Motte, what he was able to do. You know, as the season goes on, we know he's a UFA, and if this team is, you know, within a mathematical chance of making the playoffs, how does this play out? How do you treat the Tyler Motte situation? Because he is an important part of this line, and especially the lineup and the speed he brings, but assumes to be a long-term focus on this club as well. This whole contract negotiation or potential trade opportunities, it feels like it might dominate the headlines in this market anyways, in the at the end of February and near the trade deadline.
Well, first of all, Randeep, I'm confused, because as far as I was aware, Tyler Mott's on the second line.
My bad. You're right.
But all joking aside, I still think you have to look at what's best for the long term with this organization, because, you know, even if they are in the conversation to make the playoffs, we're not talking about a cup contender this year. We're not talking about a team that's going to earn home ice advantage. We're not talking about a team that would be expected to go on a deep run. So you can't keep Tyler Motte unless you're able to extend him, of course. That's a whole different part of the conversation. If you get him on a deal that, you know, you feel is a good cap hit to keep him around and keep him a part of this team, then absolutely that's an option you should take. But we also know the mistakes this organization has gotten into in the last few years of overpaying bottom six forwards. So as much as it might be difficult to part with a guy like that when you're in the middle of a playoff battle, the fact that you're battling just to get into the playoffs shows that you really still have to be looking towards the long term and building up assets and, you know, preparing yourself to try and be a contender in, you know, a few years from now, however long that timeline ends up being, based on the way Jim Rutherford and his new general manager decide to approach it. So I know it might be tough if you're at the trade deadline and you're 2 points out of a playoff spot to move Tyler Motte, but I still believe that that would be the right thing to do if you're not going to extend him, because, you know, say you keep him, you're 2 points out, you end up missing the playoffs by, let's say, 3 or 4 points or something like that, and suddenly Tyler Motte walks to free agency for nothing, and you didn't get into the playoffs, which would be a worst-case scenario. So he's a guy that if you're not extending him, I think he has to be moved at the deadline, regardless of where this team finds itself in the standings.
He is Brendan Batchelor, the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Buddy, always appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor at Batch Hockey on Twitter, if you want to go follow Batch, where he drops the lines in the exact order in which they are valued all the time.
Tyler Motte is the second line. You heard it from the man himself.
All right, we got a winner in our trivia contest. Again, we were asking you earlier for a pair of tickets to Sunday's game against the Blues. Can the Canucks come back to Rogers Arena after a long layoff? Who's the first ever opponent, the Canucks regular season opponent, the Canucks played at Rogers Arena and GM Place? The answer was the Detroit Red Wings. Big shout out to Barbara for texting in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Was it Angela or Barbara?
It was Barbara, I believe.
Yeah, Barbara. I'm getting conflicting reports here.
We got Barbara winning.
All right.
Sorry, Angela.
Into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. All right. And we do it every day at this time. Other submissions into the 650-650 inbox. This time it's your hot takes. And you got a chance to win tickets to the Zach Brown Band. It is Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me.
It's brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist to guide you through the journey. Go to LeaseBusters.com to start the process today. Again, you're playing for tickets to the Zach Brown Band, which the Out in the Middle Tour happened in October 21st at Rogers Arena this year. Tickets on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. through Ticketmaster. Don't at me, Randeep. Heat is overrated. The Ooh. Movie Heat is overrated.
Yeah, we came up with that earlier on, and you and me got added pretty good earlier. But you're bringing it up here again, and I can't disagree, man. We came with this earlier on, and I think it was like 70-30 people disagreeing with us.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's the whole point of Don't At Me.
Exactly. I got one here. Don't At Me, Juho Lamico could be this generation's Artem Chubarov.
Woo!
You don't hear him, you just see his game. You didn't know much about him when he was traded for Ilya Levy, but 3 goals, he's been solid, he's been playing 14, 15, even 16 minutes a game at times. I'm saying, if he sticks around Vancouver for beyond this year, could be a bit of a cult hero, this Juho Lamico.
Well, try in New Westminster, says Lamico, shoot me in the AHL, don't at me. I suppose my question, Randy, would be, what kind of car does he leave behind?
Yeah. Does he have a Benz in the basement of the Rogers Arena there, the garage?
Oh, man, that is an all-time Canucks lore. Chubarov. 650-650. Don't at me. Unsigned text. Petey will play at a point-per-game pace the rest of the year. Sorry, point-per-game plus pace
okay.
the rest of the year.
So making up for lost time is what that text is saying. We got Marcus and Gibson's coming with this one. Don't at me. IMAC needs to see what Petey says if he calls him pissy. IMAC would never do that. Never do that.
I can't see IMAC doing that in the presser. This one, Blake in the Ridge. Don't at me. Packers are going to lose to the Niners on a last-minute shanked field goal miss by Mason Crosby. I feel like Crosby's a clutch.
Yeah, Blake in the Ridge might be showing his fandom there. I think that's a Niners fan texting in. You never
it's fine,
know.
It's fine.
Weirder things have happened in the NFL. We got this one. Don't at me. The Canucks will be the straw that breaks the camel's back. That's Kyle from the island.
The Oilers' camel's back.
The Oilers' camel's back. Sorry, yep.
Yeah.
Not their own.
All right. I can do it. Don't at me. Pedersen is not bad. Still plays soft and easily knocked off the puck. Time to bulk up. All right. 650. This one, Jesse in Nanaimo. As great as Tyler Motte is for the team, he's going to bring the Canucks a first-round pick from Tampa Bay. Don't at me. Oh, sorry, that one's from... Brendan in Nanaimo. Back-to-back Nanaimo text coming into the inbox.
Nanaimo's repping today. Love it. Don't at me, but Yaroslav Halak will be traded to the Colorado Avalanche for a second-round pick. That's David in Vancouver. Okay, that one makes more sense to me than Edmonton, because if I'm Yaroslav Halak and I have a choice of where I want to go, I'd rather go to Colorado than Edmonton for a couple of reasons now. Their team's not great, and... Unless you live in Connor McDavid's house, who wants to go to Edmonton these days?
Oh, man. This is what Don't At Me is made for here.
What do we got?
Kevin Killarney. Don't At Me. Pavel Bure is better known as a Panther than a Canuck.
Ooh. Shots fired.
Look. We take in all submissions here. And we love rating them because we love to know what you're thinking. I think that's a clubhouse leader here for Don't At Me.
I can't even believe a take like that would come from my hood of Killarney. That is almost blasphemy in the city, but that's a strong submission.
I don't agree with it, but hey, that's like this is what Don't At Me is made for. Coming with the hot takes. Coming with the takes. I love it. Man.
That's a strong one. We got some good ones. We got some good ones here. We got Cam from Ladysmiths coming in with Don't At Me. Mott is like Sonic with all the rings on the forecheck. That's a great reference. Sonic the Hedgehog reference.
Oh, love it. Don't at me to all the people who were slamming my Chiefs when they are in 3-4. How's their team now, suckers?
That's Vicky from Poco. She dunking.
It happens. Jacob from Nanaimo. We're reading all the Nanaimo texts right now. Don't at me. Quinn Hughes is the MVP over Thatcher Demko for the Vancouver Canucks.
Don't at me from Patio. Lamico is the next Besant Motors brand ambassador. Very well could be. I have no information on that yet. I'll keep you posted.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. All right, we'll pick a winner on the other side. We'll also talk to our guy, Danny Kelly, from the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast. Get you set, some player props, and what you need to know coming up this weekend for the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. All on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Welcome back to the show. Final segment of the People's Show. Thanks for making us part of your day. Talk to Danny Kelly in just a second. This football season, make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey, and the ClaytonPub.com. Danny Kelly from the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast and the Ringer.com. He'll join us in just a second. 20 years ago to today, guys, the Tuck Rule. Raiders, Patriots, end of the game. Fumble? Incomplete pass? The Patriots dynasty may never happen without the Tuck Rule.
That's true, and I don't think the Raiders have ever recovered from that moment either. Both of those things are true.
Just forever left alone in the dark.
Yeah, poor guy. Like, I'm looking forward to this 30 for 30 that's going to come out pretty soon on, you know, Brady and Charles Woodson are going to relive the moment and all that sort of stuff. But in the moment, yeah, you could tell. The Raiders, I felt bad for the Raiders, man. Like, that was the moment where you're just saying, looking back at it, it launched that dynasty. It launched everything that happened. And the Raiders just kind of tumbled. They just tumbled after that.
I love how Tom Brady has become a content guy since he left New England. I feel like he left New England just to do it for the content. Here he is unearthing skeletons in the Patriots closet of the Tuck Rule game. And he's like, hell yeah. Could have changed the whole trajectory of the Patriots. I can say that now that I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
And I know that they made the Super Bowl, what was it, a year later against the Bucs. But still, come on, they didn't win. We can still say it hurt them. It hurt the Raiders.
Vic Nizar, Randeep Janda here on the People Show. Let's talk to our guy Danny Kelly from the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast and theringer.com. DK, did you enjoy that weekend of football? Obviously, look, it's a full weekend, but no lead changes in the second half through all the games.
Oh, is that right? There were zero?
None.
It felt like everything was over pretty early. It was probably a good thing, actually, like especially during like that Buccaneers game. You could get some stuff done. You could do some chores, you know, catch up on email, that kind of stuff during like those games, because it was just no chance in the second half. It did feel like a long weekend, though. I don't know about you guys, but that was a lot of football watching, and usually that's not a bad thing, but by the end I was like, this is getting to be a bit long.
Yeah, I admitted to these guys on Monday that Buccaneers-Patriots game, or the Buccaneers-the Eagles game, I started to turn on 2022 draft film. I was like, I'd rather watch Jahan Dotson than whatever this Eagles offense is.
Yeah, maybe he'll be on that team next year. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Well, looking ahead to next weekend, you know, you've got so much to kind of look back at last weekend. I know some of the games were not the most exciting, but please, 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 KC versus the Buffalo, do not disappoint us. Yes. Like, this quarterback matchup is an elite one. And, you know, we look at Josh Allen, the perfect week that he had. You know, how much of a problem does he pose for that KC team, the way he's playing right now?
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate X factor, really. You know, the way that he can pass and run the ball, like, you just never really know what you're going to get from him because he's just so good. He's so powerful as a runner. He's like 6'4", 240 pounds, really fast, really elusive. Jukes guys in the open field, all that stuff. Like, he's very, very dangerous in the red zone. Like, he's Cam Newton, essentially, in his prime as a runner. And then, you know, he's also a very good passer, can throw the ball deep. He has some good weapons in that offense. We saw all that come together. Buffalo literally put together a perfect game. It was seven possessions and seven touchdowns before they kneeled on that final drive. And so, you know, that was an all-time playoff performance. And it was funny because it kind of masked and overshadowed what was a ridiculously good performance by Patrick Mahomes against the Steelers. He had like 400 plus yards, five touchdowns in that game, and no one's talking about it. So, you know, this is just going to be one of the best quarterback matchups of the year, probably, honestly. And this is kind of like, it's sad to say, but this is really maybe what should be the Super Bowl. I know that there's some other good teams out there, but just this matchup is so much fun and kind of like the aesthetic ideal for what we want in football, I feel like. So I'm super excited about it.
You know, from a fantasy perspective, you know, Josh Allen, 5 touchdowns, you know, 300 yards, and it's only 4 incompletions, but it was so spread out, right? Like, nobody had more than 6 receptions. Nobody clipped 100 yards, obviously the touchdowns, but those can be unpredictable. How do you project where the usage goes moving forward, or do you just play whack-a-mole and hope your guy, whoever you pick this week, is the guy that gets it?
I know, that's the hard part, too, especially now that they have, like, Isaiah McKenzie is a part of their offense now. You got Gabe Davis kind of playing, Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley, everybody's rotating in. Dawson Knox is always good for a couple big plays, it feels like. So, yeah, it's tough to know, and that's actually what I think makes them so dangerous, too. It's like, it's not like you can just take away Stephon Diggs and you're good to go. You know, they've got so many guys in that offense. Devin Singletary's even come on really strong over the last few weeks in terms of running. He's also factoring in the passing game. So, they just look so complete right now, the Bills do, and it's one of those things where if they're playing any other team this week, I'd feel like they're going to easily win, but because they're playing another really hot team in the Chiefs, it's just like really hard to pick who's going to win this game. It feels like it's going to be just a barn burner and a really fun game to watch.
Well, the other AFC matchup, you've got the Bengals and you got the Titans. As of today, Derrick Henry was cleared for contact, and it looks good. You know, how much does that change that matchup? Obviously, he's an MVP-level player at the running back position, but, you know, he's probably not going to be, you know, 100% coming back off a long layoff. How does that complicate things for Cincinnati when you've got this horse in the backfield, you know, ready to go?
I think it's an interesting question because, honestly, they played pretty well without him, too. You know, it's like they've managed to kind of keep things alive. They're the number one seed in the AFC. And they did that with Deontay Foreman, with like a rotation of backs in the backfield. It kind of does, you know, sort of strengthen the whole argument that running backs don't matter. However, I would say like Derrick Henry, he has a psychological, I think, edge. It gives them that edge because he can hit the home run like none of the other running backs in that group can do. So you really have to have sort of an extra step or two in his direction, whatever direction you think he's going to run. You have to really kind of like come down like an extra step or two in the box because he is the type of runner who, and it's very rare, like that can really hit that home run. So that gives them that distinct advantage, and like he tilts the field that way. I think just generally speaking, like, you know, the other 20 runs, I don't know if he necessarily gives them a huge, huge edge, but if he can break off one of those big ones, that's like, you know, where his value lies. So I think that's going to be really big for them. It gives them an opportunity to do all the stuff and play action that they want to do too, which is really important. That psychological part of it where you get defenders taking one step in one direction because they're afraid of what Henry can do, and that opens up things in the passing game. So I think it's almost a psychological advantage. Obviously, it's physical too because you have to tackle him, and that's not easy. But I think just generally speaking, he is kind of like completes the circle of what they want to do on offense in terms of play action, passing, and running after the catch and all that stuff. So it's just, I think, a big thing for them.
Which is the most, like, fantasy-rich matchup this weekend to you? Just kind of looking at all these matchups, right? We mentioned the Bills and the Chiefs, but both quarterbacks can spread it out so much. You look at some of the star power in some of the other games, it might be easier to hone in on, like, the Rams and say, okay, Akers is back. He's performing really well. Odell, he's scoring touchdowns. He's got 6 since he arrived in L.A. Like, which is the most fantasy-rich matchup to you?
That's a good question. I'm a little bit nervous about this Rams-Bucks game because both teams have some injuries. Obviously, Tampa Bay is down a lot of their key guys right now, especially on the offensive line. So that could really hurt the ability for Tom Brady to do his normal thing. And then I think I've always been like a big Matt Stafford guy. Like, I'm a big supporter. I think he's really good. I think he's elevated this Rams offense way, way more than you could see with Jared Goff. However, still a little leery about him in the playoffs, just based on his experience there. Obviously, Tom Brady's, you know, more experienced than any other NFL quarterback in history in the playoffs and the postseason. He's had way more success. So I probably give him that edge. And so I'm a little worried about what Stafford is going to do under that pressure, under that light. The game I probably would point to, honestly, is Cincinnati, Tennessee, because both of those teams have given up a ton of passing yards this year in terms of their secondaries. They just have given up a lot of yards. I think they're 7th and 8th respectively in total yards given up. And I believe Tennessee has given up the 2nd most yards to opposing receivers this year. So I'm kind of circling that Tennessee game, or sorry, the Cincinnati-Tennessee game, where Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase, potentially T. Higgins just going off and having a lot of yards in that one. So I'm excited to see how that kind of play out, how that matchup plays out.
Well, you talked about the touchdowns that Odell Beckham Jr. has, and, you know, I know he's playing in the same, you know, team as a Cooper Kupp, but it's been good to see that talent shine for Odell Beckham Jr. He's had a connection with Matt Stafford. Question is he back?
It feels like he is. It really does, doesn't it? I mean, he looks really spry. He looks explosive. Got that pep in a step back. I feel like playing in Cleveland, playing with Baker Mayfield really kind of sapped the energy out of him. I know he was playing through a lot of injuries, too, during his time there. So those variables all overlap. But it must be nice to have, you know, playing an offense like this where they're creating explosive plays. The way that they scheme things up, it gives you a lot of one-on-one opportunities. Obviously, like you said, having Kupp in there. Defenses, and we saw this on that touchdown, honestly, last week when he had the fade route touchdown, the opposing team was double-teaming Cooper Kupp on that play, and so Stafford just threw it up to him. And so that obviously creates some opportunities for Odell, and he looked really good. Like, he went up, he pirouetted, he caught the ball, touched both feet down, looked like vintage Odell-type play. And I think so, you know, again, the stars are sort of aligning for him. He's getting healthy. He's really getting his speed and explosiveness back. He's in an offense that fits him a lot better, and he's with a quarterback, I think, that really fits his skill set better, just gives him the, like, opportunities to make those types of plays. So, yeah, and I know he's, like, 28 or whatever it is. He's getting older in terms of the peak receiver years, but he still does look like vintage Beckham to me.
He's like Pacino in Godfather. Every time I'm out, they pull me back in. I'm just going to be buying back into Odell Beckham next season. The other guy in that offense, I kind of mentioned him earlier, like Cam Akers. This guy's coming off an Achilles injury. What are you doing running around like that, looking amazing? Like, talk about a performance there from Cam Akers.
This is like an unheard of thing. I mean, I really think this is the first time that we've ever seen something like this, especially with that injury. Like, you know, Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic wrote a really interesting article that kind of detailed how he went through his rehab, how they did the surgery. Basically, the way that they described it is like trying to sew the ends of two mops together, like the tendon, like that's how you do the tendon. And so it's obviously not an easy injury to come back from. We've seen this in sports, you know, it's just, it tends to sap a lot of the explosiveness from these players. However, the cool part about this, the breakthroughs that they've made and how they're treating this injury is like, he was able to start rehabbing so quickly. We saw these videos online. And he never lost any of his muscle mass. So that's why I think that's a huge part of the reason he looks so explosive already. It's like he didn't have to build up all his muscle mass and get that explosiveness back over like a course of like a year. It's only a course of, I think it's been like 6 months since he hurt his Achilles. So this is unheard of. He's an all-time outlier. But I also think this is hopefully a sign that the Achilles injuries aren't quite as career-threatening and career-ending for a lot of guys as it has been in the past, because that's just, you know, obviously a devastating injury. So it's really, really encouraging, hopefully, for not just him, but for everybody that has that injury.
Oh, before we let you go here, Danny, Howie Roseman, the GM and of the Eagles, came out and basically said, 2022, it's Jalen Hurts. He's our guy. It looks like he's going to be the starting quarterback. From a fantasy perspective, how attractive is Hurts for next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think on one hand, he is going to be one of the top quarterbacks. Assuming everything that Howie Roseman said is true, like he does hold on to the starting job and they start to build around him. They have a great offensive line. They have a coach that has embraced his ability to run and his talent for running. And so he's obviously been a big part of what they do in the red zone. So all the rushing and all the rushing touchdowns make him such a great fantasy option. So he's going to go into next year, assuming nothing else changes or nothing else negative happens there, that he'll be like a top three, top four, probably quarterback. Going into next year just because of the running upside that he has. But on the other hand, it is, you know, one of those things where it makes you a little less excited, clearly, about like Devontae Smith, some of the other pass catchers in that group, and also the running backs in that group. I mean, Miles Sanders probably, I think he set an NFL record this year for most touches without a touchdown because Jalen Hurts always steals them. So he's like stealing all the red zone rushes and all the red zone opportunities for Miles Sanders. And then Sanders also just kind of got unlucky because Boston Scott, I think, scored 8 touchdowns. So it's just one of those things where it's exciting on one hand, but it's also a little bit discouraging for the rest of the pass catching group and the running backs in that offense, because Hurts is basically just hoovering up all the fantasy production.
How much is that just lip service too for this time of the year from Howie Roseman? Yeah. Like, yeah, this is our guy. And if somebody wants him, you're really going to have to pay top dollar.
I know, that's an interesting point of view. They have 3 first-round picks, So, you know, obviously that gives them an opportunity to either take a guy in the draft or use that draft capital to trade for a guy like Russell Wilson. I know that's probably not something people want to hear right now, but that is something that not a lot of people are going to be talking about, I think, this summer. So I think that it's definitely like a positive for people that believe that Jalen Hurts has what it takes to be a starter in the league. And I am one of those people, but it's also not binding. It's not legally binding. They can certainly change. You know, we've seen teams do it a million times, commit to one guy and then trade him like a week later. So it's a cold business. And so it really doesn't like lock anything in place other than kind of gives you the feeling that's the direction they're going right now, at least.
He is Danny Kelly at Danny B. Kelly on Twitter from the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast and theringer.com. Where else can people find you this weekend, DK?
You can find me on Twitter, and I don't think we're going to be doing any more green rooms this year, but check out the green room app, because that's something that we do every season, do the sit start stuff on Sunday morning. So that's something you can look for next year.
And you can also email ringerfantasyfootball@gmail.com. DK, appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Sounds good.
That is Danny Kelly in this football season. Make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey, and the ClaytonPub.com, and be there for the big game Sunday, February 13th, Sportsnet 650 and the Clayton Public House partnering for the biggest football party in the Lower Mainland. 16 TVs, 2 projectors, $5,000 in prizes available to be won, including a smoker, ZZ Top tickets, and more. Tons of specials and exclusive offers. You got to listen to Sportsnet 650 closer to the game for your chance to win a table reservation and a $50 tab to get you started. The Clayton is following all public health measures, including sanitizing stations and all staff wearing masks. Again, February 13th for the big game at the Clayton Public House. Spick Nazar, Randy Pjanda here on the People Show. Some house cleaning. We got our winner from Don't At Me. Big shouts to Kevin in Killarney with the Don't At Me of, again, you might not agree with it, but Don't At Me is meant for the hot takes. Pavel Bure, better known as a Panther than a Vancouver Canuck.
That is a hot take. It's scorching. We have this unsigned text saying, block Kevin from Killarney's number. we will not be doing that. Just come with a strong Don't At Me tomorrow, and you can win tickets too.
Look, you got to put yourself out there. That's all we're saying. Dude, Don't At Me is your chance to really separate yourself from the pack. And Kevin Killarney stepped up, and I don't agree with it, but I appreciate the effort. And as the kids say nowadays, Randeep, Kevin understood the assignment.
Yes. Yes. He, you know, you don't have to be right. Maybe he's not. I think 99% of Canucks fans would say, how dare you? But he took his shot. Shoot your shot. Kevin shot his shot and ended up winning the tickets.
To the Zach Brown Band. Again, tickets go on sale this Friday for that concert. Again, we might not believe it's the truth, but it might be Kevin's truth. And that's all that matters here. That's all that matters for Don't At Me. Speak your truth.
And that's kind of what the People Show is all about. Come with your take. It might be wrong. It might be right. But we're going to acknowledge it at the very least. And today we did by giving him 2 tickets to the Zach Brown concert.
Kevin has texted back. I'm just saying because I got a one-of-a-kind 30th anniversary Upper Deck hockey card of Bure in a Panthers uniform. I'm really curious about how he's known in other markets other than Vancouver.
And, okay, awesome. We got Ian coming in with a Killarney bias. Hey, I'm from the hood. That's my hood. So I'm not saying there's a bias, but hey, shouts to Killarney.
Have you ever noticed how I read all the Coquitlam texts?
I've noticed.
And on the post-game shows, people from Coquitlam call in. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's go to that call. It happens sometimes. It happens sometimes.
You rep your hood. That's what, you know, we rep Vancouver, but yeah, I'm a Killarney guy. Of course, Kevin Killarney. Anytime I see Killarney pop up in the text box, I smile a little bit, Vic.
There are factions within the factions. It's just what happens. Unsigned text here. So is Messier a better Canuck than a Ranger?
Ooh. Ah, man. No.
Hard no. Hard no.
Speaking of Mark Messier, though, he's going to be on the TV broadcast of the Leafs-Rangers games. I saw a promo earlier on. Ooh. So if you want that Mark Messier content, folks, tune into the pregame for the Leafs game.
Oh, man, that is a great way to end the show. Great way to end the show.
My people cursing at us, yes.
Man, that's awesome. 650. Keep the thoughts coming in to Dan Riccio on Canucks Central, flying solo, Satya Shaw, on the travel day. You saw him yesterday on the TV. It's a travel day for Satyar Shah. So Dan Riccio running solo, but he'll have plenty for you throughout the course of the show. It's not just Dan Riccio ranting and raving for a couple hours. No, he's got a lot on the way. A full hour with Kevin Woodley going to be joining him at 5 o'clock. Ian McIntyre at 4 o'clock. Should be a great conversation as well. Jack Han going to be joining him, former AHL coach and NHL analyst with the Maple Leafs. He's going to be joining Dan Riccio as well at 4:30. So a lot on the way on Canucks Central here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.